This is one of our favorite outdoor explorers and has been edited to be replayed here today.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. Bear attack is a deeply primal fear, and outdoors people spend a lot of time preparing for it. And there's good reason for that, because people do get hurt by wildlife in Alaska every year. But there are many other hazards to be aware of, and on today's show, we're going to be talking about how to keep them in perspective, including the danger of wildlife. Later on, I'll be talking with a biologist and with an outdoor educator. But first, my special guest is Dan Bigley, who survived a terrible bear attack that took his eyesight. Dan has written a book with Deborah McKinney called Beyond the Bear, How I Learned to Live and Love Again After Being Blinded by a Bear. Thanks for being with us, Dan.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So, I mean, the subtitle tells it all. This is not a book about a bear fear. This is a book about how you recovered from this and got to where you are, which has been an amazing story. You started a new career, and I first encountered you when you were receiving an award from the University of Alaska.
Yeah, I did. I sort of realized, after kind of making it out of the woods, so to speak, from life-threatening health, circumstances, I came to a point of realizing that, living a life of bitterness and sort of the why me and woe is me mentality had, far more ability at that point in time to destroy what life I had left than the bear did. And so really made an effort to just make the most of my time left on earth.
Yeah, kind of a blessing in some way in terms of what you've done, at least for the rest of us. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, even for myself, I honestly can't look back and say I have any regrets.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So tell us about this attack. I mean, what happened?
Yeah, well, basically it was, after a stellar day of fishing down on the confluence of the Kenai and Russian rivers, and had my dog Maya and my friend John and I had hiked back to the Grayling trailhead there, and we're literally, all the way back to the trailhead, just kind of at the bottom of the stairs there, when we had an encounter with a sow. And at the time, it was just a undescript bear, but this bear encounter was very different than many that I'd had previous, in the sense that she was very clearly agitated, and relatively aggressive. She stood to face us with her hair on end and was
good-sized brown bear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, stomping her front paws and kind of jumping up and down on him, huffing, puffing, some growling. And so my friend John and I, realizing that this bear was not showing any sign of vacating the area, we decided to back away and headed further upriver and just take a long way around to a totally different trailhead so we could just clear the bear's area. And had done that successfully as far as backing away and starting heading upriver. What we didn't expect, though, was that after walking for just a couple minutes, the alders started shaking pretty, vigorously on the trail in front of us, and we thought we'd been cut off by that same brown bear. And so we turned around and started heading back down towards the trailhead where we'd had the initial encounter, basically just trying to find at this point the fastest way back to other people or to possible shelter, because we felt that we were essentially being stalked or followed by this bear. And within just moments, the totally unimaginable happened, and that was that with the shaking bushes now behind us, on the trail, directly in front of us, and pretty much at missile speed, the brown bear came tearing around the corner wildly. In fact, so fast she had to dip her front left shoulder just to make the turn, and in just a moment she was up upon us.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like pretty much too fast to react.
It really was, it happened with lightning speed. And the strange thing, is that when you're going through something really that traumatic, the mind has a way of warping time. Mm-hmm. And so even though, the events took place over, literally moments, I don't even know if seconds would be an adequate unit for measurement. But, even it sort of happened in slow motion, or at least that was my perception of it, even though it all just happened in a flash. But even with that, my dog Maya was out in front. My other friend John was directly in front of me. And, they both leaped off the trail, and the bear, as the bear came tearing down the trail, And what struck me at a certain point in time, I was standing my ground, and as she was growing nearer, and you know, it was like the closer she got, the more slow motion things sort of happened in. And the closer she got, her head just growing bigger and bigger, her eyes, you know, sort of burning yellow with fury, her mouth agape. The crazy thing is that, you know, that image would really burn itself in my psyche, this really terrifying image of the bear approaching me. And, you know, it would burn itself in my mind as the last thing I would ever see with my eyes was the bear that would ultimately take my eyes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So part of your recovery, I guess, has been trying to learn to get away from that image and want to be outdoors again and want to still be somebody who doesn't just cower in fear.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it goes back to that not wanting to live a life of in bitterness. And so, you know, how does one achieve that? And fortunately, I had some great role models, you know, other people who have done remarkable things after after trauma. And one of those role models was, you know, our Alaska's very own Lee Hagmire, who had also been blinded by a bear, and came to my hospital room in the days following after waking up from a medically induced coma. And the message she shared with me is that, you know, there is hope. There is hope after such a tragedy and a trauma and after blindness. And not just hope of staying alive, but hope of living a life worth living. And, you know, not many of us really experience, you know, being on death's doorstep in the way that Lee and I both did. But I think for each of us, if we were to stop and really reflect on, well, what would that mean to live a life worth living? I think the answer is it would be different for all of us. But for me, living a life worth living after the bear and after blindness most certainly had to include fishing.
Yeah, right.
It had to include being outdoors and camping and spending time out there with, well, I didn't have a family at the time, yeah, but, you know, with my family.
Well, a lot of us would think, like, that's a horse you couldn't get back on. I mean, that seems, was it terrifying the first time you went back into the woods? And now you can't even see what's around you.
Right. Short answer, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it was at first, you know, and I had to really deal with my demons, so to speak, you know. And so I did start slowly, you know, working my way back out there and at first kind of taking the shelter of the drift boat and shelter of really populated areas. But, you know, then I did eventually go back into the woods and even back to the Russian several times since then. And that was really intense. The first time I actually went back to the very spot, actually pretty much went there and did not fish. The group went on and I sort of stayed behind by the river to have a moment of intention with the place and with myself. And, you know, I just laid in the sun beside the Russian River and tossed pebbles in. And when my mind would wander to all of the what ifs and, you know, visualizing a bear walking out of the woods and approaching me, panic would set in, the heart would start pounding. I would just think to myself, you know, this way of thinking isn't helping me. And mm-hmm. So I need to change my thinking. And each year it's gotten easier and better, less affected by trauma, less affected by nightmares, and really more and more able to experience that same sense of joy that I have always experienced mm-hmm. out in wild places. And I think perhaps the most rewarding is helping my children experience that same sense of awe and wonder.
Yeah. You know, what you say about this is not the right way of thinking. I need to think about what's going on around me a different way. That's a pretty good life lesson for any situation.
And right.
I wonder if, you know, just on our subject of wildlife safety, I would imagine you go through a lot of regrets and what ifs, and you mentioned that, like, what should I have done differently?
Absolutely.
In a way, it doesn't sound like you did anything wrong.
Well, no, it's true. I mean, you know, there were things that, you know, for example, we weren't carrying a gun at the time. Or for that matter, bear spray. And so certainly I would recommend, you know, that folks use bear spray and things like that. But going back to our situation, what's clear is that it really wouldn't have made a difference for us. You know, there's no way we would have had the time to pull a gun to react in any meaningful way. And for myself, I always think, well, geez, even if I had a gun, I most likely would have shot the person right in front of me rather than the bear,
right,
which was John. So I always joke with people now when I do get asked, you know, were you carrying a gun? I always joke. I say, no, but I always carry a gun with me now. So be careful if you're out on the rush and don't make a noise.
That's
if
right.
I'm around.
Just shoot in every direction. Huh? Yeah. Well, it seems like you probably get asked a lot of questions, maybe a lot of dumb questions, but you've made it your task to go out and sort of spread the word about this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Alaska has so much to offer its residents. And I think to not spend time outdoors is to not really know our home, you know, and or to have that sense of place that comes with it.
Yeah. So is the book, do you feel like it's getting a good response? Are people reading it the way you wanted them to?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, no Oprah yet or anything. but absolutely. I mean, it's getting a remarkable response. I think, you know, clearly a 5-star book on Amazon. I believe we're up over 127 5-star reviews, something like 7 4-star and no 1, 2, or 3-star reviews. So certainly people who do read it have a lot of great things to say about
all
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. And I know Deborah McKinney, your co-author, is a fantastic writer. And I'm really, really grateful to have you in here, Dan. The book is called Beyond the Bear, How I Learned to Live and Love Again After Being Blinded by a Bear by Dan Bigley, our guest. We're going to let Dan go, and then we're going to hear from, after a short break, some experts on wildlife and outdoor safety for the rest of the show. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. I'm Charles Woolforth, and I have two guests in the studio to talk about wildlife hazards and all the safety hazards we encounter outdoors in Alaska. We're going to take off from Dan Bigley's comments and try to explore putting hazards of wildlife in context of our behavior as outdoor users, in the context of the other hazards we face, and the places that we frequent, and how do we keep wildlife safe too? Because we end up putting down a lot of animals that seem to be a threat to humans, and I think people feel badly about that. And I've got two great guests to talk about this from different perspectives. Paul Twardock is somebody we've had on the show before. Paul is with the outdoor program at APU. Thanks for being with us, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
And Jesse Coltrane is the area biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, who's responsible for the critters in Anchorage, as well as the critter-human conflicts that she's trying to prevent and deal with. Thanks for being with us, Jesse.
I'm glad to be here.
So I think there's a natural tendency to get into talking about how you avoid bears, how you avoid hazards of bears, what to do if you're being attacked by a bear. You know, if a bear is actually in the process of attacking you, what do you do? And sometimes I think that raises a level of fear that is maybe causes people's behavior to be counterproductive, and that really what we need to think about is how not to get into a bad situation in the first place. And maybe you could talk about that a little bit, Jesse, about like what do you when you're in the backcountry, you know, sort of what's your best way of staying safe with regard to wildlife?
Okay, if you want to put it in perspective of Anchorage, you know, we've got urban areas where we have wildlife. We have areas that are considered, you know, municipal parks, which is kind of front country. Then we have front country Chugach Park, and then we've got back country. So we have lots of different levels of risk. And so it's all about assessing your risk and altering your behavior accordingly, dependent on that risk, and being able to accept a certain level of risk, in my opinion. So when you talk about wildlife encounters and negative wildlife encounters, they're actually very rare. People do see lots of wildlife here in and around the Anchorage area, but most people don't have negative encounters, and most people actually don't even encounter wildlife. The risk of getting in a car wreck on your way to a trailhead is probably higher, or getting bit by your neighbor's dog, than ever being mauled by a bear. More people are hit and killed on their bicycles on Anchorage roads every year than even, you know, even a bear looks at them crosswise. But we tend to remember people that are mauled by bears, but I doubt many people could name folks that were killed on bikes in the last 5 or 10 years here in Anchorage.
Yeah, well, it's obviously, I mean, it's such a terrifying thing to think about that that makes it a really a story that the media wants to cover. And so every time something happens, you're guaranteed it'll be in the newspaper. And so we get a maybe an exaggerated impression of the frequency of that risk.
Yeah, I think it's a level of fear of the unknown. Most people are not very comfortable around wildlife because it's something that they don't necessarily understand. And so as humans, we tend to fear that which we don't understand. And then we tend to, that fear becomes exacerbated when we do have an incident, and it does get played up big in the media.
Yeah. So my feeling is I run into a lot of bears at my cabin. There's a lot of black bears around, and I kind of like having them around. I like looking at them, but they always run away. And so the vast majority of times, if you run into a bear and it's far enough away that it doesn't feel severely threatened, it'll run away. Black bears as well as brown bears, right?
That is correct. In Anchorage, we have a lot of bears that are both food conditioned due to primarily negligent garbage practices of our human residents, and they're also very habituated to people. And so they may not necessarily just run away when they see you, as bears would in other areas where they're not used to seeing people. And what habituated means is that they're so used to us, we kind of become white noise.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily mean they're any more dangerous than any other bear. It just means that their behavior will be different. So it is a red flag. People see bears in town and they don't necessarily run right away. And it's like, oh gosh, that bear should run away. Well, that bear's most likely habituated to people.
It's just,
and it's used to us.
You're the 10th person it saw
it's
today.
Or 10th person you saw the last hour.
Yeah. Compare bears and moose for me in terms of how that kind of interaction affects their behavior. Because sometimes it seems to me I'll come upon a moose and it's mad. And I can almost guess that there have been a whole bunch of people have come upon it. And so then that moose seems kind of dangerous. Whereas a bear normally doesn't seem, at least my impression is, doesn't build up that tension level the way a moose does. True?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yes and no. You know, bears and moose are totally different beings. They have totally different behavior, and the stressors on them are different, and how they perceive stress is different. You know, we have a lot of moose in town, and how you deal with bears and moose safety-wise is completely different as well. Commonly, give them both a lot of space. With moose, yes, each moose has its individual space issue, and
right.
that can change depending on what has happened to it 5 minutes before you come along.
Time of year.
Right, time of year. And we've got moose, you know, quite a few moose that are resident in town, at least for part of the year, and some all times of the year. And so those moose have a high probability of encountering lots of people, especially depending on where they are. And right, you're correct in saying that you don't know what happened to that moose 5 minutes beforehand. It might just have been chased around the block by a loose dog, or had snowballs thrown at it, or just had people approach too closely. So its stress level may be high. We don't typically see that kind of behavior in that with bears, but it's different because with a moose, people will tend to approach closer.
They'll
push the
right.
envelope, and so we tend to have more bad encounters. Whereas with a bear, maybe people, they're at lower densities. We don't see them that often. They don't have as many encounters with people, and that they may not, people aren't necessarily inclined to get very close to a bear because they don't perceive them as safe. And so there's a whole lot of different factors at play. But I would say, I can't really say if bears get any less stressed or more stressed than moose, but I do
we'll
know
have to
that...
put them on the couch and psychoanalyze them, right?
You would have to send them to a counselor.
So, at least in the urban context, moose hurt more people than bears.
Yes. We have more people injured, and some severely injured by moose in Anchorage every year. We've had two individuals within the Anchorage Bowl that have been killed by moose, whereas we've had two human fatalities within the municipality, but within Chugach State Park, that have been killed by bears. But we do have quite a number of folks that are injured by moose every year, and the number of people that injured by bears is typically less than 3 to 0 mm-hmm. on average every year.
And probably dogs would beat either of them.
Yes.
So, Paul Tordock, you teach students about the outdoors and about the broad span of hazards that you face in the outdoors and being safe. Obviously, don't focus on hazards. Hopefully, people don't focus on hazards. They focus on getting out there and having fun. I was thinking in preparation for today's show about the people I know who have died in the outdoors in Alaska. And sadly, you know, after a lifetime here, I've known a lot. And I would say airplane crashes and drowning probably lead the list. I do know two people who have been killed by bears in my lifetime in Alaska, too. So it's not, as we heard from Dan Bigley, it's not something to take lightly. But what do you feel like is the biggest hazard in the outdoors that you want people to know about to be safe? In other words, we'd like them to know about all the hazards, but what's the most important thing that you want people to know?
Well, I think it's our students, and I think the most important thing, which is know thyself, know your limits. The biggest hazard really is yourself. The biggest tool you have to be safe is between your ears, your mm-hmm. brain, and using your common sense, staying within your limits, doing some research before you go out, knowing what the hazards are and how to recognize them, and then taking the appropriate means to minimize the risks. I see many times people going up Flat Top, for instance. I was up there. I like to go up once a year right at the peak, when a like, beautiful sunny Sunday afternoon, just to sort of get my social scientist hat on and look at people. And I see people there. You know, I saw a guy up there in a tux once, and he was obviously running from a wedding or something like that, you know, totally unprepared to being up there. And so I think being prepared is probably, you know, that old Boy Scout motto, is probably the best thing that really you can do to avoid simple things that we don't really think about. We tend to focus on the animals, but really the weather, having yourself prepared for cold. It might start off on a sunny day, and it could end up being blowing 30 to 40 miles an hour up in the Glen Alps and raining out mm-hmm. by the time you're done with your hike. And if you're not prepared for that, and if you went after work, you haven't eaten a meal since lunch or maybe even breakfast, mm-hmm. You probably haven't had enough to drink.
Maybe so you're just wearing your running clothes or shorts.
Running
or
clothes, yeah. You maybe had a beer after work and then you decided to do it. Mm-hmm. That all leads to a potential for a misjudgment. And a simple thing like a sprained ankle or getting a little bit turned around and lost can, you know, all of a sudden create a situation where you're in serious jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. And being by yourself, it multiplies the risk that you for any situation you face.
Yeah, and being by yourself or being with other people that you're not aren't really capable of taking care of you if you're hurt. Mm-hmm. That I've seen many groups out there that I wouldn't want to be with. I'm like, I want those people to cover my back if something happens to me. Mm-hmm. And so knowing who you're with and making sure you have the same goals, that you're out there to enjoy, have fun, not to go off and do something really radical that you're not prepared to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And something that's come up in the last couple of shows, which I had not really thought about, but having a leader in your group so that if something's going wrong, you have the ability to make good decisions.
Yeah, and a lot of times that's just talking it through. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, what are we going to do if we get separated as a group? Mm-hmm. What are we going to do if, does someone have first aid kit and know how to use it? What if Joe has a heart attack? Like, I was just talking to a guy last night about it. Was doing a ski race in Idaho, and the guy right in front of him had a heart attack, and no one knew what to do. The guy ended up dying. Knowing, sort of having that, a little bit of first aid training goes a long way. It doesn't have to be the greatest, highest level. You don't have to be a paramedic, but to know some basic stuff like what to do with a broken leg, what to do with a sprained ankle, to be able to recognize the signs of hypothermia is crucial to be in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like everybody should who grows up in Alaska should know this stuff, but I know that that doesn't always happen, and that people who've just gotten here maybe don't know how to deal with 50 degrees in rain or how to deal with a rushing glacial river that's in their way. Where do you get this information?
Well, there's a lot of literature, a lot of books, a lot of stuff on the web out there of how to do it. Some of it's just going out there to do it. You know, probably the best way is to find someone that has that experience mm-hmm. and go tag along with them. The Mount Nurin Club.
Meetup groups.
Yeah, meetup groups. The Mount Nurin Club, Connect Canoers and Kayakers. Actually, this in June, we're doing a Boating Safety Day. If you're interested in water stuff, through the Office of Boating Safety and Alaska City Kayaking Symposium. So there's opportunities out there to get stuff. UAA has some classes. Our classes at APU, we don't do much in the summer, and they're more focused on our students. But I know in Valdez, the community college, Mat-Su Community College, all offer classes that are relatively reasonably priced and open to the public.
Mm-hmm. So let's list a few things that you want to know. How to dress and recognize signs of hypothermia, what to do about them, how to get across a river,
yep.
right? How to find your trail, not get lost.
Yep. Yeah, read a map or a GPS if you're make sure your batteries are going to do GPS. I still like maps. Electronics fail. Know where you are. I think it's important to have someone in town that knows where you've gone and what you're doing. And know sort of when to say, when should I start to get worried? The other day I'm like, oh boy, I haven't heard from so and so, and I know they're off doing this. I wonder. So I made a couple calls, and they were back and safe and sound. But just to have someone that's whether it's a spouse or a responsible kid or a friend that sort of knows what you're up to is super important.
Mm-hmm.
Other things to know: have some food, have some water, or the ability to treat water is, I think, very important to have also.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into how to avoid wildlife conflicts. Both of our guests can weigh in on that, because not getting into a conflict with wildlife obviously is better than being in a conflict and having to deal with it. Just the same as we're talking about, it's better to dress properly but not have to deal with hypothermia.
Yeah.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about putting wildlife hazards in context, and Paul Twardock is my guest. He's from APU. Jesse Coltrane is from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So we need to have some specifics for this scenario. Let's think about a backpacking trip in the Chugach or maybe in Denali, where you are bringing your food along. I've heard many times about how to store, you need to store your food, not bring it in the tent, not have fish smell around. Jesse, do you want to give some thoughts about how to avoid attracting wildlife that might be hazardous?
Yeah, and I just wanted to take a step back and mm-hmm. reiterate what Paul said in the sense of traveling in the backcountry, that it's the same thing with wildlife. Is common sense goes a very long way,
mm-hmm.
and not being complacent. Those are two of the biggest things that probably the lack thereof, the complacency and lack of common sense, are probably what get more people in trouble with wildlife
right.
than anything else.
And so you're dealing with people who've gotten in trouble, and it's not because there's somebody who is sort of conscious of these things and they forgot one thing. It's usually because somebody's totally.
Sometimes. I mean, of course, yeah. There are instances where, things just happen.
Sure. There are instances where
you could be very prepared.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. And mm-hmm. things can happen. But for common sense and knowing your surroundings, just like traveling in any type of outdoor setting, goes along with way with wildlife. And then knowing your risk. And so when you talk about going out camping or backpacking in wildlife habitat, there are some things that you can do to mitigate your risk. And so one of the big things is attractants. So in a camping situation, your biggest attractant is going to be your food. When you sit down for the night and start to set up your camp, look at where you're camping. Are you camping along a trail along the river where there's salmon running?
Mm-hmm.
Are you putting your tent right near a trail that's heavily used by wildlife? You may be putting yourself at a higher level of risk.
Sure.
So moving your campsite away.
So if you see a trail that's not made by humans, it's probably a game trail, and that's maybe not the best spot.
Right.
To put it. Yeah.
Some game trails are heavily used by humans,
yeah,
too.
Sure.
So look, be very aware of your surroundings. One of your biggest attractants, like I said, was your food. So we always recommend people to cook away from where you're sleeping. Don't store food in your tent. If you are in an area where you can hang your food, in a proper bear safe manner, that's a great thing to do. Hang all your food on any other toiletries that might be odoriferous.
So soap and that kind of
soap,
thing.
Soap, toothpaste, things like that. Hang it up. But hang it in a way that it is inaccessible for bears. Then if you don't, there are lots of different options for bear-proof containers for backpacking or kayaking, canoeing, you know, different size things. There's portable electric fences, which are a fantastic option, especially for those people that have a very hard time sleeping at night because they're worried about bears coming into their tent. And so you can run portable electric fences now off of AA batteries. They're pretty amazing what they've got. They're really lightweight and packable. So there's all kinds of different fence designs. So those are some of the things that when you're camping, traveling, just like Paul said, you know, you're with going by yourself, you're less safe. However, group dynamics can also be an issue. It's the same thing with wildlife. Traveling in groups is typically safer. You tend to make more noise. And if you do have an encounter, especially with a bear, you're perceived as a bigger obstacle and threat to that bear. And so the chance of a negative encounter happening is lower. So traveling in groups is always great. And then if something bad does happen, then you have other people to rely on to help you with your safety. Carrying a deterrent, we always recommend folks to carry bear spray. Mm-hmm. Bear spray is a very effective deterrent, especially against brown bears, which is the number one bear species that you're probably going to have a negative encounter with over black bears.
So. Yeah, and we can get into some more about that, sort of the whole weapon issue in the second half. But dispel this or confirm this for me, or maybe you don't have an opinion, but there's this thing that people say, well, women who are having their period should not go backpacking, or that attracts bears. And I mean, I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. Maybe
I think the jury's still out. Mm-hmm. I would say keep a clean camp no matter what your condition is. And that would be your best defense. But by no means have I avoided hiking or camping at specific times of the month in fear of bears at all. I just don't think that there's enough scientific evidence out that says that you're at a higher risk.
Yeah. And Paul, I mean, my perception, maybe I'm complacent because I've been around bears enough, but my perception is I would never not go somewhere because I was afraid of bears. And I do know people who are too afraid of bears to do X. In fact, I was in Yellowstone and you know, the Park Service does their whole thing with teaching people how to avoid bear encounters. And so we had our backcountry permit. We were required to watch the film. And then there's some people from Europe who, after watching the film, gave back their permit and said, no, we're afraid. Yeah. And that's a tragedy. I mean, I just think that's crazy. What do you think?
Oh, I think that's totally true, that people are fear. I think Jessica said something. What we fear, you know, we fear in itself is almost a contributing factor to some of this these things. And I don't think, I mean, bears and moose are amazing animals, and I can't even match probably what Jessica's dealt with and probably what you have, but I've seen a lot, and they're really cool animals. And I think if you take some simple precautions, it's fine. And there's always the chance that something's going to jump out of the bush. It's always there. But it is so minuscule and so small that it's not really worth not going because of that chance.
You're probably at more risk in the city from a variety of things than, I don't know if you are or not, but you're certainly
I can put my academic hat on and go, lot of hours of people out there driving and stuff like that. But I do think, like, the bike ride analogy is a great one, way riskier on a bike. I'll be riding our bikes, don't get me wrong. But I think, but we don't think of it that way. It's that thing that we cannot control that I think we fear the most.
Yeah.
And we feel like we can't control animals, where in reality, by taking those steps that, you know, Jessica was talking about, is great. I mean, I make a lot of noise. I walk the Turnagain Arm Trail. I'm a runner. I really walk places. I ran over here, right?
Of course, your office is about 20 feet away.
Yeah, I know. I made noise. I mean, I'm like, there's all kinds of runners on that trail, and I'm like, I got on the trail, and I'm like, hey, bear. Right off the bat, and everybody just looks at me like I'm nuts. But I, right when I go out to some place where I think there might be bears or moose, I make a noise.
Yeah.
And I make a lot of it. I got a big, loud voice. And so I think that is you don't want to surprise them.
Yeah.
Everything I understand about
yep.
it. And I'll put a plug in for the electric fence. I paddled from Yakutat to Cordova this summer, and it's a bear city out there. And the day before I bought one or left my paddling partners, we should go to the bear fence. And it was great. I mean, I accidentally tested it, and they work. they wake you up.
Yeah.
So. All right. Great. Well, we've got so much more to talk about on the subject of wildlife hazards, putting wildlife hazards in context, and being safe when you're out this summer. Not to scare you, not to diminish what you're doing, but just to make sure that everybody comes back and we can talk about it all in the fall. Two great guests with me today, Paul Twardock, you're just hearing, he's with the outdoor program at Alaska Pacific University. Jesse Coltrane is the area biologist for Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And so much more to talk about in the second half. We're going to get into this issue of like what kind of weapon should you take and is that a good idea? I wonder if bells work. And I know that singing is always a helpful thing to do along the trail. Keeps you cheerful as well as letting the bears know where you are. I'm Charles Woolforth. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
Our recent extremely mild winter means bears were out and about earlier than usual this year. Hi, I'm Eric Bork, the producer of Outdoor Explorer. And with news of several bear attacks recently, we decided to revisit Brielle Schaefer of KCAW's attempts at learning how to use bear spray.
I'm at the Tony Rebar Memorial Shooting Range in Sitka.
Range is hot.
The U.S. Forest Service is training its seasonal employees to use guns and pepper spray as bear protection.
Bear!
Jackie Foss is a soil scientist for the Forest Service in Sitka. She's giving me a lesson in how to use pepper spray against a charging bear.
And we pull it out, we pop the top off with our hand supporting the base, and then out forward spray, and then
several paper targets with pictures of brown bears are propped up with PVC pipes and placed throughout the range. One target is rigged to a pulley to make it move.
Bear! Fun, huh?
She recommends moving to the side while still spraying forward to get out of the way.
Bears have a lot of inertia, and so when something gets hit in the face with pepper spray, it's going to disable them possibly, and you don't want to be in front of essentially a freight train.
Biologists have found that pepper spray has a better success rate than firearms. According to a study in the Journal of Wildlife Management, a person's chance of getting seriously injured from a charging grizzly doubles when bullets are shot, compared to when bear spray is deployed. Bear pepper spray is way more potent than mace. And that's why we're practicing with inert cans of compressed air.
They're not cheap. They're like probably $15, but it's worth it if you're going to carry it to at least see how far it actually goes, because this says 40 feet, but they are really effective maybe at 25.
Foss stresses that bear spray is not a repellent like bug dope. It doesn't make the bear stay away.
It distracts the bear enough to stop any negative behavior so that you can leave.
She says once it's out of the can, it's not really a deterrent anymore. It can actually be an attractant. So it's best to get out of there and let others on the trail know. Getting a direct spray on the bear is also important. I talked to Alaska Wildlife Trooper Kyle Ferguson. As part of law enforcement training, he had to get pepper sprayed.
There's a difference, I can say, having been sprayed myself, having the full-on blast effect at close range versus a residual mist effect.
He says the first 15 to 20 minutes after he got sprayed were terrifically uncomfortable. His whole face burned and he was involuntarily flowing snot and tears. But another officer wiped it away and was okay. He was more bothered by the liquid in his eyes. The point, Ferguson says, is that the spray can have varying effects on different people and bears. They have a higher pain tolerance, too. He recommends getting two cans of bear spray and using one as a tester to see how it feels to be around that concentrated amount of pepper. Practice, in this sense, really makes perfect.
Well, the thing about bear spray is a lot of people, in my experience, carry it, just carrying it, thinking, well, here's how you take the safety tab off and this will be great if I ever need it. Well, if you applied that same logic to a gun, you'd say that person's crazy. Like if I just carried a rifle that I'd never shot before, never practiced with, I'm probably not going to prevail in an encounter where I need the gun.
Now it's my turn to give it a shot. I get coached by Joe Serio, a biological technician with the Forest Service.
Okay, so at this point, the bear's at a decent distance. You only have so much pepper spray, so you're really going to want to try and use the pepper spray to the best opportunity as you can. Awesome.
He's had to use bear spray out in the field before, and it worked. A few years ago, he was working at a sockeye weir on Redout Lake, south of Sitka.
We nicknamed this particular bear Sly. We'd been seeing it for a few years, and we called her Sly because she was real sneaky. And one day, we had our heads down, weren't paying attention, and she showed up behind the weir and was just right there. And so we decided to try deploying the pepper spray, and it definitely turned her away, and she ended up moving away from us.
He says the bear spray kept them safe and saved the bear's life. While pepper spray is an effective tool against aggressive bears, Ferguson says people should still be aware. If you come across a bear on a trail, make your presence known. Wave your arms, make noise. Never run from a bear, but slowly try to back out of the area. And a little bear spray practice wouldn't hurt either. For AK, I'm Brielle Schaefer.
I think I probably jumped the gun on taking the safety off.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. And today we're talking about wildlife hazards in context. Our guests are Paul Twerdock from APU's Outdoor Studies Program and Jesse Coltrane from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And earlier we heard from Dan Bigley, who is a bear attack survivor. We're coming up into a season when moose are going to be in need of a little space. And we always have problems in the springtime because we want to get out there on our trails and the moose are calving and they're, there's some additional risk of conflict there and they need their space. It's a sensitive time of year and occasionally you'll be out on the trail in one of our parks on the coastal trail or at Kincaid and you'll have this sort of very special experience of seeing, a newborn and then you want to tell people, stay back, give them some space. Jesse, tell us about what people need to know about staying off the trails just so that during the moose calving season.
So, this is a really good time to talk about fear. If you want to be afraid of something, be afraid of moose in the calving season. And fear can be a healthy thing. It can keep you safe because you can mitigate your risk by avoiding certain areas. Moose start calving usually around May 15th. Peak calving is around the 20th. Then we have a second pulse in early June. And during that week, about the 20th to the 25th of May, is a very critical time for moose. This is a calving period. And then moose calves aren't very mobile for the first couple of weeks. The cow and calf pairs or trio or will stay together and stay in a relatively small area for the first couple of weeks until they start moving around. During that time period, your risk as a trail user is very high. We've seen a trend in Anchorage of increased higher risk activities such as biking. Mountain biking has become more and more popular in the city, and we've seen a development of more and more mountain biking trails. In the last couple of years, we've had quite a few injuries of mountain bikers that have encountered moose during the calving period, and primarily in Kincaid Park on the new single track trails. Mm-hmm. The trails went into areas where moose have always calved and there were no trails prior. They went in the fall, spring rolled around, and now we have mountain bikers and moose. The trails are a great resource for the community for recreational from a recreational standpoint. But from a moose standpoint in the spring, it's a nightmare. These trails are very narrow and windy, low sight distance, low visibility, mm-hmm. brush on either side's really high, bank turns to allow for high speed. And so we have quite a few people that end up getting injured primarily over Labor Day weekend, which coincides with peak calving.
Memorial Day weekend,
yes. Yeah, Memorial Day weekend, where we have peak calving, everybody wants to get outside,
yeah.
Kids are out of school all of a sudden. So what I would really recommend to folks is, you know, avoid areas where you know your risk is higher. Avoid those activities that you know your risk is higher during that time period. So biking is a high-risk activity because of the speed involved.
And you're not going to be able, I mean, you might think, well, if I see a moose, I'll just stop. But if you're tearing down that narrow trail, the moose is going to take you out before you even know it.
Yeah, you might stop 10 feet short, but, uh-huh. you know, from a moose perspective, that's like a hop.
Yeah.
They can reach that far with the front leg. And it's what we see. And so, and it's a very stressful time period for the cow and calf moose as well. And so you're adding extra stress onto them by using those trails and running into them. And so I would say please avoid using these narrow, winding trails with low visibility with high-speed activities during calving period. So beginning around May 15th, especially by May 20th, and going through most of the month of June. Though it's really high risk. We have hundreds of miles of trails, you know, throughout Anchorage. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of great options to avoid some of these areas. And now that doesn't mean you're not going to encounter moose on other areas, but mm-hmm. your chances of having a bad encounter on trails where you have greater visibility, longer sight distance,
right. So the ski trails would be,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, in June, you'd be better off in the ski trails than the single track.
Stay on the wide trails.
Yeah.
And, you know, primarily, you know, the parks have always asked folks to stay off the mountain biking before June 1st because the trails are typically soft and we rut up the trails pretty badly. This year, I'm a little concerned because breakup's coming very early and very fast. Things are drying up quickly.
Oh, I think people are on them now.
People are going to be on them and they're going to coincide right with peak calving and we're going to have injuries. Please heed any warning signs when we get moose cow calf sightings in the parks on certain trail areas. We will put up signs. If we put up a sign saying that this is a high-risk area, it's a high-risk area. So
enter somewhere else.
Enter at your own risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, please avoid it.
Yeah, yeah. Similar deal with bears, I guess, in Far North Bicentennial Park. There's that one little spot where there's brown bears, and you post it when there's stuff
right.
is dangerous.
Well, right, and that's the other thing, you know, you talk about, well, I don't want people to be afraid to go outside. Uh-huh. Well, you should be afraid to go in some areas. That'll keep you a little bit safer. High-risk areas are areas along salmon creeks.
Areas rovers, brushy areas.
Brushy areas, but especially areas where you have a concentrated food source for bears, which is primarily, starting in early June, will be along the salmon creeks in town. So Campbell Creek, you know, is a big one in Bicentennial Park. Penguin Creek, Bird Creek, those areas are relatively high risk too when the salmon start running down there. Mm-hmm. Ship Creek. So those are some of the areas that you would want to avoid, especially with biking and other high speed. Mm-hmm. There's lots of other places to go. There's lots of easy ways to detour. So it's not worth the risk at that time.
So much of this is education and public information, which I feel like, you know, I'm glad we can do that on the show. But the outdoor community generally is pretty diffuse. It's usually people do this stuff with their families or by themselves, so they don't necessarily have channels of information to learn this stuff. I mean, I feel like that's sort of if people knew more, then you wouldn't be out on the coastal trail seeing them crowding moose to get a close-up picture or some of the other dumb stuff you see people doing. Paul, you're educating young people in outdoor studies, and what kinds of misperceptions or things do you find that you need to dispel, or you know, is that an issue, like with people have stuff that you need to teach them to be safe?
Well, I think this, you know, bears, mm-hmm. and it's tough, you know, like I think a better word than fear is respect, and having a lot of respect for them. I'll use an example. I was down in Colorado over spring break hiking, and I was terrified of mountain lions. I mean, I'm like, mountain lions are big, big cats that prowl in the night and maul people, and they never find them again. I mean, that was terrifying to me. And the people that live there were like, oh, no, you just, you know, this is what you do, and this is where you don't go, and when you don't go there. And I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. And it's sort of the same thing with bears and moose. And actually, really any hazard, I say, well, don't put yourself in a situation population, that the risk goes up. You know, the chance of something happening and the consequence of something happening, as that rises, that's risk. Just don't go there. You know, we talk about avalanche. Don't go on the avalanche slope. Don't go out to Kincaid on the mountain, on the single tracks in the main. I mean, it's simple. It's not that I'll go someplace else. Don't be bombing down Rover's Run in most of the summer when the salmon are right in there. You know, when I'm out in the woods or out in the mountains, I'm not going to put my tent right next to a salmon stream. Mm-hmm. It's just, you just don't put yourself in those situations. You learn what those situations are, and then you avoid them.
And there's this big Alaskan discussion about what kind of a weapon or protection you take for yourself into the backcountry, and you'll be walking down a trail and see a guy with a cannon, you know, strapped to him, and then other people, you know, never take any kind of defensive thing and make it through an entire lifetime safely. So I wonder what do you do? What do you take?
Well, I primarily take bear spray. It's easy. It sits in the shelf. I just grab it and I go. There's occasion when I'm in a very serious bear country, I might have a shotgun. And those are usually situations where I think that I might have a situation where I can't move and the bears want something I have. If I'm hunting, if I'm, you know, around a food source, that might be the case. I take a shotgun, but primarily bear spray. And then I talked about a bear fence. I don't hand food. I find I've tried it. I'd love to have a food hanging contest sometime. I find most trees in Alaska South Central are these scrawny little spruce trees, and it's a huge effort to get it. And I'll challenge my students. I say, okay, I'm the bear. Now I'm not even a very good tree climber, like a black bear is, and I'm not as tall as some of the brown bears, and I can still get their food down. Mm-hmm. And there's some great videos out there of bears, you know, figuring out, oh, that string goes to here, I bite that cord, the food comes down, it's mine. Yeah. We've used barrels, for a lot of places we go. Mm-hmm.
So you do some pretty amazing trips with your incoming freshmen at APU. I mean, what was this trip? You did a big float trip last.
Right, all the incoming traditional freshmen float to Yukon. So we have three their academic classes. There's a sustainability class to look at the history of the area. There's an outdoor skills oriented class, and then there's a environmental science class. But they go, the president goes along with them, and it's a cohort building type of class. So it's a pretty cool thing we do.
I think it's a fabulous. I mean, I wish if I was a college student, that would be something that would make me want to go to APU. Are most of your students pretty outdoor savvy before you get them, or do you get some like college city slickers who you are throwing on the Yukon and they have a bit of culture shock?
Well, for those that particular trip, there's the outdoor students all have some sort of background, mm-hmm. and more so all the time they come in with more experience, whether it's through scouts or camps or whatever they're doing. But that course, some of the liberal studies students are definitely like, wow, I've never done this before. Mm-hmm. So it's all over the board.
Yeah. This is a question for both of you guys. So you feel, I suppose you feel that you do need to have a gun to protect yourself in bear country. I feel like you're probably at more risk with the gun unless you actually know how to use it and are have some training. I mean, do you weigh in on that? I mean, walking into Walmart and buying a gun and throwing it in your backpack is probably not going to make you much safer. Paul?
Yeah. I sat through an NRA sort of basic shotgun safety class, which I'd highly recommend. Really excellent one-day class that various folks around town offer that if you've never used a shotgun, and they have the same thing as pistols, super informative, taking care of the gun, having the gun secure. I found that typically in the outdoors when I'm with people and we have a gun, the gun's sort of not immediately accessible. The only way it's really useful is in a surprise situation, which usually is what we're talking about, is if it's right there.
Right. And, you actually have to be ready.
Yeah. And that means you're just throughout some basic safety protocol with firearm safety. That means a slug that's, if not in the chamber, it's right there, ready to go. So I tend to think about guns as more, like I said earlier, as more of a preventative, where I'm going to be in a situation where the gun I have an aggressive bear that's just not going away, and that is where I feel like, okay. I remember once my brother was up hiking, and I didn't have a gun, and we're hiking up in the Clearwater Range, and there's a sound, a cub way, way away, like, you know, half a mile away. I'm like, oh, that's sort of cute. Sal comes toward us. Oh, just checking us out. Comes close. And, you know, within about 200 yards, my brother's like, why don't we have a gun? And I'm like, now this would be a situation where one might be useful. But it went on its way. Yeah. I mean, it just was sort of like, I don't know, bluffing us or doing something. And we made a bunch of noise, and it went on its way.
Yeah. Jesse, do you want to comment on guns and to the extent they make people safer?
We have a lot of different deterrents that are excellent for bears and for, you know, trying to be safe in bear country, bear spray being one of them, firearms being another. And bear spray is a very effective deterrent against bears, in particular brown bears. And it's very simple to use. And what Paul said is absolutely correct. With a firearm, you're going to be pulling, if you're in a situation where you are very immediately threatened by a bear, getting your gun up and getting a round off and
aiming.
putting it in the kill zone is very difficult. We go through bear safety training and shotgun training every year at Fish and Game, and what we do is we have a bear target on a sled with wobbly wheels attached to a four-wheeler, and we run it straight at you. And you are in a ready position, you know, and getting a couple rounds off is very difficult. So imagine if you're out hiking in thick brush with a shotgun over your shoulder, or a sidearm. So the quickness and accuracy can be an issue. Bear spray is very effective, and you don't have to be accurate.
Right.
You point it in the general direction and depress the trigger, and you create a cloud that the bear then runs into, and so you don't have to aim it. It's very effective. But one of the things I find is that people don't keep their bear spray readily available either, or they haven't practiced with it.
Yep.
So with any deterrent that you are planning on using, you should be very well practiced in and proficient with. So if you're using bear spray, you need to practice. If you're using a firearm, you need to practice. I think sometimes people carry a gun and toss their common sense aside because they feel like they're more protected and safe if they have a firearm. So they may be more apt to go do something that they necessarily wouldn't.
So back to the first point of common sense. Yeah.
So,
I wonder, before we run out of time, just briefly, are people getting better in Anchorage about keeping their garbage under control, do you feel like, or do we still have a long way to go with that to avoid attracting bears?
We have a very long way to go, unfortunately. I think people are improving, but even in the best neighborhoods, you see 30% of the folks have their trash out, and that's in the best neighborhoods. So it's a constant battle. Bear resistant garbage cans are available through Alaska Waste. A lot of people have garages. You know, we ask people to please secure their trash in a garage or a secured building or in a bear-resistant container if you have no other option, and your bird feeders.
Yeah.
Lots of attractants out there.
Okay. Well, thanks. This has been really interesting, and I want to thank my guests, Jesse Coltrane, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Paul Twardock with APU. Earlier, we heard from Dan Bigley, whose book is out on shelves now. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Goki. I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.